Hey, this is Liam Burns, and you're listening to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Kylie Omiller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Burns.
Kayla Trainer fires to score.
You're kidding me. By Dylan Ward.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Adam Moore and Hutton Jackson.
What's up, Pro Lacrosse fans? Welcome to another edition of Pro Lacrosse Talk. I'm your host, Hutton Jackson, at Hutton Jackson on Twitter. We have my co-host, Adam Moore, at Adam Moore PLT on Twitter, and we're back to recap the busiest weekend in pro field lacrosse history. We had 11 games. That's the most in a single weekend in pro lacrosse history. It's going to be broken in 2 weeks when the PLL travels to Albany and AU is in their final week. So we're going to have 12 games that weekend, more, you know, and, you know, maybe we'll get some more, Adam, in the NLL as well. We're going to have 14 teams. That's minimum of 7 games in a weekend. Usually if all teams are playing, but you know how teams play doubleheaders often too. So we may reach similar numbers when the NLL rolls around as well. But thoughts on how much games we had this weekend, thoughts on any of this news. I know we're going to get into some trade news. We're getting some injury news. We're going to recap the PLL. We're going to get into Athletes Unlimited week 2 and look ahead to week 3 as well. Give our picks as usual. I made some ground in the standings. You're still a little bit ahead of me. But you know, well, I'm getting a little bit closer to, you know, those crab cakes, but give me your overall thoughts on a busy weekend in pro lacrosse.
Yeah, man, it was just a fantastic weekend overall. You know, you were glued to your TV, whether or your iPad or your computer for the whole weekend, man. It really, your schedule's starting to fill up with all these games. It's been pretty awesome. Whether it was, you know, catching a game on the DVR or watching it live, it was fantastic to follow along. Lax Twitter was on fire this weekend. So it was going, and it's been great to see this much support for both the AU and the PLL.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. All the PLL games this weekend, unfortunately, were on Peacock. So if you have Peacock, you're, you know, sitting fine. But due to the Olympics, they weren't able to have any televised. Sure. But the nice thing is, you know, you were able to watch lacrosse kind of whenever you wanted. Now, yep. I was fortunate that I got to watch most of these games live throughout the entire weekend, which is actually, ironically, a first for me this whole season. I tend to get most of the games. I tend to then rewatch the ones I end up missing just because of my schedule, working weekends and stuff. But I got to catch a lot of them this weekend, which was really nice. But yeah, that's a nice thing for a casual fan. You know, you don't have to watch all the games, but if you're itching for some pro lacrosse, you pretty much are set, you know, starting Friday afternoon, you know, in the evening with the AU all the way through the end of Sunday. You know, I had a triple header on Sunday. That was due to weather delays on Saturday for the PLL, but we had three games there. So as early as 9:15 Central Time and 11:15 Eastern Time, you're able to start watching lacrosse all the way up into the final game at 4:45. So it was a busy weekend. It was a fun weekend. And this PLL playoff picture really started to take shape. Yeah. You know, well, let's go through the standings, I guess, right here. Atlas sit at top. They win, they're getting that first round bye, Adam, which I think is obviously, you know, on their mind. I think Coach Rubio kind of downplayed, you know, the fact that they were sitting at the top and that they could secure that. They've been taking it one game at a time, and they did their job, you know, this weekend winning both their games. But they win, they get that first round bye, but they're playing a Water Dogs team that wants that bye as well. And if the Water Dogs win, they have a very solid chance because they have a +12 goal differential. Now, it will depend on how the Archers do in both their games, how the Redwoods do in both their games, and the Whipsnakes too. If they win both their games pretty handily, they could maybe make up, but they have a -12 goal differential. So a little bit harder for them to get that top seed. I think I read somewhere from Joe Keegan that it's like a 1% chance that they get the top seed. So even if they do win both their games pretty handily, you know, other teams could also perform, and it's going to be tough for them to get that. So really looking at, you know, Atlas, Water Dogs, and I'd say Archers right now. Redwoods again still kind of have a chance, but you know, they have a tough stretch in this weekend as well. And then, you know, Chaos ended up sneaking in as well due to the fact that the Cannons lost their game and the Chrome lost both their game. So that setup, I think, was the perfect scenario. You know, obviously not for a Cannons or Chrome fan, but Cannons Chrome are playing for a playoff spot. They are playing in their final weekend. Matchup is between each other. And you couldn't ask for, you know, playoffs have come early, you could say, for this Albany weekend. So I'm, you know, everyone's going to be glued to that matchup. I mean, all these matchups are going to be great. You get another Redwoods Whip Snakes matchup, which we'll see a new addition to the Whip Snakes, and Justin Gutterding, we'll get to that a little bit later. And, you know, another Archers Whip Snakes matchup. Redwoods Chaos was a good one earlier this year. They have a little bit of history. Mm-hmm. So overall, you know, Atlas Water Dogs competing for that top seed, essentially. Like, it's another going to be jam-packed weekend in Albany, and certainly looking forward to those games as well. Any thoughts from these standings? I know your Water Dogs are sitting right there at the top. I know we like not to pick favorites, you know, when covering the league, but we have our biases. Any thoughts, Adam, on the standings right now?
Yeah, I picked the underdog in every game last week because I wanted absolute chaos going into the last week. But I kind of got it right. I was, as I said on Twitter, I was 3-Atlas last week. I was 3-2 when it comes to last week games. The Atlas crushed it, and we'll talk about our game picks later. But I'm a big Water Dogs fan because two of my favorite players in the league in Dylan Ward and on the other end, or both ends, in Zach Currier. So I'm just really excited that because of the way the score differential works, it could be a number of teams at the top mm-hmm. when all is said and done at the end of the weekend.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I hinted at it a little bit, some news surrounding this weekend that didn't actually involve the weekend. I mean, I guess it depends on how you look at it. Justin Gutterding was a healthy scratch in these Chrome games. We didn't really know he was a healthy scratch until after the fact, too. Yeah. It was kind of odd not seeing him out there. It wasn't really a lot of publicity around it, which I thought, you know, was odd. They obviously had the addition of Dylan Malloy on that righty spot. Yep. So, you know, they were obviously not, you know, they obviously added an offensive weapon despite not having, you know, their offensive weapon Gutterding there. And Gutterding hasn't had a great year all around. But yeah, I think interesting enough, we didn't know he was a healthy scratch. We didn't find that out till after the fact. And that was because he ended up getting traded to the Whipsnakes for Nick Grill. Now, the post game guys, they broke this news first on Monday night and ended up going official on Tuesday. So credit to them. They are now 2-3. So they're above 500. You know, they obviously the Jeff Teat kind of put them back into their place. They kind of, you know, dug a hole and stayed down, you know, not avoiding all breaking news for a little while. They get back in the breaking news game. They had Rob Pinnell earlier this year as breaking news as well, that trade. So they break the news first. But yeah, Gutterding going to the Whip Snakes, gets reunited with Brad Smith there. It led a lot of people to believe that, you know, Matt Rambo's injury might be more serious than originally thought, too. But we'll get to that a little bit later, you know, his status. But thoughts on this Gutterding trade? I was pretty shocked. I honestly don't like the trade that much. I'll give my thoughts, but let me hear from you on your thoughts on the trade and, you know, what the Whipsnakes get in Gutterding and, you know, what the Chrome get in Nick Grill.
Yeah, you know, I do think Nick Grill was an awesome player, but I do think Coach Staggs wins this one, right? And just in terms of a need potentially at the moment, right, on offense with adding a guy like Justin Gutterding. But, you know, if Coach Sudo likes a guy like Grill, who am I to say that's a bad swap, right? I think Coach Sudo sees something in a really strong player in Grill, and I think he'll definitely benefit that defense could use a guy like him, and I think it's a good pickup for them. I don't know if the loss outweighs the addition, but it could be looking at kind of the seasons going forward, not just this year, but, you know, they added a guy in the offseason in Randy Stotts, who's one of the best players in the world. He'll obviously be coming off an injury, and Jordan Wolf will be back. And with guys like Jackson Morrill, you know, being a really strong rookie this year and a guy coming over from the MLL and Colin Heacock playing well, that attack side for the Chrome is getting pretty packed. So maybe they're just looking forward, you know, Coach Sudo's looking forward to next season and to see what they have and maybe get some value, but out of a trade in Gutterding. But I was surprised that the trade maybe didn't have a pick or maybe another addition to it when it comes back to what the Chrome received.
Yeah, no, and I, you know, I'll preface before I kind of rip this trade, that trades in the PLL, as I, you know, I said this with the Brent Adams trade, I said this with a lot of trades. I think this one is probably the most, you know, outlandish example. But you know, if there's going to be a trade that's going to happen between players, it's going to probably be a little bit lopsided. There's too few teams, and if players are really looking to make a move, then they're going to have to be willing to give up something, you know, and the value that they put on players is different than what we are perceived value. Now, you know, I think they're that, you know, the Chrome could have definitely got a lot more out of this trade, but again, I wouldn't trade them at all. You know, you did mention they do have a lot of offensive pieces. So, you know, they still have a lot of depth at that position. I wouldn't say necessarily on the lefty side. I know they moved Crotty down a little bit, but the reason I don't like this trade is because you know, first off, I think Gutterding is worth more than Nick Grill, and that's not deserving of Nick Grill. Nick Grill's only played a handful of games for the Whipsnakes. I don't think he's going to be a difference maker on the defensive end. I think he'll play well. He has some history with Jesse Bernhardt, who's currently out. But, you know, if you're looking towards the future, like, that's, you know, great. You know, obviously he's coached by Jesse. So there's definitely some history there. And, you know, I don't think it's a bad move. Again, I don't think Nick Grill is a bad player. So it's not really what they're getting. It's just I felt that I could get more. You know, maybe you trade for Nick Grill and Ryan Tierney, you know, replace that lefty side. You know, somebody that's a little bit – it hasn't honestly had that much production. He got his first goal of his PLL career with the Whipsnakes this weekend. So maybe add him, you know, and maybe if Coach Stagg's like, nah, I'm not giving up two players for one, you throw in a fourth rounder with Justin Gutterding and get that return. I just think they could have gotten a little bit more, gotten a pick, something a little bit more. I mean, he's a founding member of that Chrome team. You know, and I just think even if he was having a bit of a down year, it felt like an odd move to me. But where I really didn't like this trade is less about the terms and, you know, the details around it, but the fact that Kevin Brown, you know, said that he was a healthy scratch for these two games because they were planning on trading him. So why not trade him prior to the weekend and, you know, get Nick Grill for those two games, or play him, you know, for those two games to help? Like, if the whole goal is to add, you know, a defensive piece to kind of give yourself, you know, that final playoff push, you know, against the Cannons, why not make it earlier, you know, if you feel comfortable on the offense, or play Gutterding? Obviously there's some risk if he gets injured and that trade falls through, but the dude can help you win those two games, and then you're sitting better than where you're at. You know, again, I'm not saying that Justin Gutterding playing would have won them those games. Atlas beat them pretty handedly. And they came back against the Chaos, but again, that was still, you know, a gutsy comeback by them that I still think that neither team really looked that great. So I'm not saying really like Gutterding would have made the difference. I just think it's weird. Like, you know, Doug Greenberg, our friend on Bet on Lacrosse, tweeted out that's 22% of Chrome's games that Gutterding missed. You know, yeah. It's like, there's so few games that having someone be a healthy scratch for a weekend when you play two games just feels like a head scratcher to me. So I really was not a fan of the trade. Thought they could have gotten more. I think it's a huge win for the Whipsnakes. I think he's going to, you know, fit in seamlessly with that offense on the lefty side, especially if in Rambo's absence, you know, you can have Brad Smith back on attack with him. You have a lot of options there. Obviously Chris Islanian, on that offense, Zed Williams has obviously been playing well, still missing that presence of Rambo though. But it sounds like they might get Rambo back relatively soon. Now Albany's still up in the air. He's still questionable. We'll toss to some sound with Coach Stagnita, where he talks a little bit about, you know, his thought process and where, you know, they're looking to get Rambo back for Albany. But again, we're hearing that his status is still doubtful for that game, those two games this weekend. And, you know, they're already in the playoffs. So as much as they would like to increase their seeding, if you're not getting the top seed, which they only have a 1% chance of getting right now, you know, it's probably smart to rest him for another week. But we are hearing that he should at least be back for their Salt Lake City weekend when they, you know, start the playoffs. So that's a good sign. You know, there's some rumors that he might miss the entire season. That's not true. It sounds like he's going to be able to come back for the playoff push. So that's a good sign. But yeah, I think, you know, training for Gutterding helps this offense tremendously. I think that doesn't mean like, you know, he's been traded to replace Rambo, or, you know, that Rambo's injury is that much more serious. I think it's just another piece for this offense and something they can switch up, because they have not looked good on the offensive end. Defense has also been, you know, a little bit suspect too. Kyle Burnler has just not been playing like he has, like he's not his normal self. But, you know, those are our thoughts on the trade. Again, not a huge fan. Again, when you're grading PLL trades though, there's only 8 teams. So if a deal is going to get done, it's not like Gutterding wasn't really probably going to go to any other team. I was shocked that he even went to the Whipsnakes, but these trades tend to be like, all right, you know, Coach Sudan, if he wants to move Gutterding and the Whipsnakes, you know, are interested and they give an offer, he can't really go to, you know, a lot of other teams. Like, and there's not many other teams that were probably going to get, you know, he was able to make a deal with. So you're kind of limited in your options. And I think that's why you see some lopsided deals like this. This Gutterding trade to me felt a lot like a baseball trade that you would be making if they, you know, you had, let's say Gutterding's going to be a free agent next year. Yeah. Let's say his contract's big. Okay. You want to move him, you know, for some young pieces like Nick Grill, build up that defense a little bit, you know, replenish like your rookies or whatever, replenish your young players. Not that Gutterding's old by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, that would make a lot of sense to me to make that type of move, you know, kind of seeing what the Cubs did. They traded a lot of their former, you know, stars that are, you know, kind of in the middle of their careers or whatever. But with the PLL, these contracts are with the league. So honestly, a lot of these players, if they re-sign with the league, they're on your team indefinitely. Gutterding would have been on the Chrome indefinitely, you know, until they decided to move him. That's really only way you get moved is if you get traded or if you get released to the player pool and then picked up. So that's why this trade is kind of weird, but it reminded me of an MLB type of deal though, like that you see at the deadline. And this MLB deadline was absolutely bonkers this season. So yeah, it reminded me a lot of that. Like it kind of read the same way, but again, when you're not dealing with money, like, you know, you're only moving Gutterding to get an asset in return. You're not, you know, moving his contract to the Whip Snakes. You know, you're not moving him to get, you know, some people in return because he's going to be a free agent next season. So I would like to see that come into the league. I think we're a few years away from that. That's just, you know, the nature of pro lacrosse right now. But let's talk a little bit about that Chrome Atlas game. Dylan Malloy makes his debut. He played really well in that opening debut. And again, like they needed a kind of a spark. They still have their issues are, you know, twofold in many different ways. So that's why even him playing well wasn't really solving the issue. So, you know, and Trevor Baptiste absolutely dominated this weekend. We'll get to his record setting day, you know, as well. But overall, it was kind of disappointing to see the Chrome just come out and really lay an egg. I know we thought Dylan Malloy was going to add, you know, bigger impact and he played well, but what were your thoughts on the Chrome kind of just fizzling in this game, you know, and obviously give the credit to the Atlas. They're a wagon right now, but thoughts overall on this game.
Yeah. I, as much as it was the Chrome, not really putting it together as they have kind of a majority of the season, like the Atlas are just completely dominant, right? You know, we, other than that week one loss, they've been dominant the entire season. And I mean, Trevor Baptiste, talk about a guy in a position that if you're on, it means so much. He was 25 of 30 from the stripe in this one and broke the record for most face-off wins in a game with this one. So and ground balls in a single game at 19. So that was absolutely dominant. So let's hear from Trevor about those records.
This is the first time I've heard about that. So I didn't really think too much about it. It means a lot, you know. I think, you know, it's cliche to say, but it's so true. You know, we got a great group and we had great wing play. I think a lot of times there's a lot of plays that go unnoticed, you know, me picking up ground balls. It's Peter Dirth coming in first game of the season, boxing out the wing guys. It's Chick, you know, telling me where the green space is. And Danny, you know, coming out here and battling, and it's amazing. So they make it really easy.
So obviously you heard Trevor, he gives a lot of, you know, love to his teammates as well, but congrats to him on a big day. And he, you know, absolutely dominated this weekend. Overall, this team again is just so dominant. You know, I think that top seed is theirs to lose. They're gonna have a tough test against the Water Dogs. Won't be easy, but overall, this team is playing at a, you know, a high level. And if Trevor Baptiste continues to win them possessions, like they're gonna be able to just continue to put up points. And this defense has been playing really, really well as well. So credit to the Atlas for holding them to 10. They've held their last three opponents to 10 goals a piece. So, you know, JD Calaruso playing really well in Jack and Cannon's absence. So give him a lot of credit as well. But overall, this Atlas team is a force to be reckoned with. Moving on to some other big teams in the Archers and Redwoods. This was probably my favorite matchup of the weekend, the one that I was looking forward to the most. And we had to wait 2 years for it too. The last matchup was in 2019 playoffs, where, you know, Tom Schreiber notably injured his collarbone, had to, you know, exit after the, you know, the first half, and the Redwoods ended up, you know, putting the dagger in the Archers and moving on and going eventually to the championship. But this game was as advertised. It was back and forth. We saw the Redwoods, who are notoriously not, you know, a transition team, score some transition goals, had a little bit of everything. It was played in the rain, so just the whole atmosphere was fun to watch. Marcus Holman had a sick goal that the splash. I mean, there was probably a splash zone in the fans section because he just, that rip just let water fly everywhere. And I know people have been talking how we just need to, you know, wet the goals.
Yeah, man.
During even the dry games.
Yeah, my guy Mike Keneally from East Coast Dyes always tweets, like, it has to be wet down. The goals have to be down because it looks sick when shots come off. And I absolutely agree with Mike on that one. So that snapshot and picture of Marcus's goal is pretty wild.
Yeah, just hose those goals down, you know, in between quarters, I think. And yeah, and just and give us a little bit more from those goals. But yeah, overall, you know, the Archers looked really, really good. Trey LeClaire had a great game. He had a hat trick, the rookie, and he looked really good on those pick and rolls. you know, that, that the Archers are known for. And, you know, guy Ryan Ambler played well as too, played well too. But I think the big story from the Archers, I think, not only in this game, but in their season, is their efficiency on offense. They shot 35% on the day, and that's allowed them to stay in games and win games because they have still been getting dominated at the stripe. I think that's an area of concern for them going forward and that they're going to have to address this offseason. You know, Stephen Kelly is playing well enough, you know, against opponents of his skill set, but like going up against guys like Trevor and TD, it's been tough for him. And TD dominated. He had 74% faceoff percentage.
Yeah.
He contributed to that for the Redwoods. You know, overall, the Redwoods dominated the faceoff battle, but they weren't able to convert that. Again, credit to the Archers defense that's been playing so well this throughout the year. And a lot of that is in due part to Adam Gittleman, who had a great game. He had 16 saves and 63% save percentage as well. So kudos to them. I think the Archers, you know, they obviously got off to a 3-0 start, got knocked down a peg a little bit, losing three straight. And I think a little bit of that was, you know, I had to do some soul searching. So let's listen to Marcus Holman, who kind of talks a little bit about what the Archers did to prepare for this game.
It's almost like a new season, you know, just like with how much time we've had since our last loss with the bye week and then the All-Star game. So I think for a lot of guys, just a chance to reset, you know, and get ready for this second half push of the season. I think, you know, I mentioned to Chantel out on the field, like, humility is something we talk about as an organization. Like, you know, when you think of our captain and our leader, Tom Schreiber, like one of the most humble guys in the game. I think maybe we got away from that a little early in the season, you know? And I was really proud of our guys just being able to, I think, to come back to that value of our team and our organization and just play tough tonight, you know, and just scrap in between the lines and not expect anything. You really have to earn everything in this league. Like every ground ball, every goal, you know, every stick check, every knockdown. And I just felt like we had that vibe tonight, that energy, and, you know, I think we played a full game. So it feels good, you know, to have a playoff spot clinched and, you know, another week off, and then we'll get ready for our doubleheader weekend.
So obviously Marcus talks a little bit about the humility that they kind of brought back. You know, I think that's a good – I'm glad to hear them, like, kind of admit that because I thought it was odd. You know, they win that third game against the Water Dogs pretty handedly, and they're popping champagne in the locker room, which is great and all, you know, to celebrate wins, but, you know, probably a little bit premature when you're, you know, only three games in. And they got knocked down a peg a little bit, lost three straight by one goal, came back out and, you know, had a big win against the Redwoods that they needed. So, you know, kudos to them for recognizing, doing a little soul searching, you know, during the break, and they came out and got that much needed win. Any thoughts on this game though, Adam?
Yeah, only one thing, you know, I mentioned Marcus's goal, and you mentioned Adam Gittleman. He had a busy weekend. He was up at Lake Placid kind of showing off the Lac Sixes, so he was in cage for that as well. So he had a super busy weekend, excited to see what he does. He's having an awesome season for the Archers, really looking forward to see him back in the playoffs soon.
Yeah, and you know that game didn't disappoint despite the weather delay that was really long, and pushing this Water Dogs Whipsnakes game to the next day, which we saw a little bit of sluggishness from both those teams because of that. They were playing at 9:15 in the morning after thinking they were going at Saturday. So
sure, and you know what I always say: what's better than two lacrosse games? Three lacrosse games. It only makes sense that it was a busy weekend and a lot of fun on Sunday to watch three awesome games.
Yeah, triple header from the PLL, double header from Athletes Unlimited. We'll talk about Athletes Unlimited a little bit later. But let's talk this Water Dogs Whipsnakes game. Again, very sluggish. A goal wasn't scored until over 8 minutes of play. That was Jay Carlson, who ended up having three of the Whipsnakes' first four goals. They go on a 4-1 run to kind of start the game. And it looked like, you know, maybe they were kind of getting back in rhythm. Jay Carlson doing Jay Carlson things around the crease. But after that point, it was all Water Dogs. A lot of that's in due part to Dylan Ward. Honestly, the game could have been more than 4-1 if he hadn't, you know, really made some big saves early on. And that kind of just let the Water Dogs hang around. And once they got going, they never looked back. Dylan Ward had a 19 save performance. This offense that was, you know, missing Connor Kelly played pretty really, really well. It was nice to see Kieran McArdle, who's kind of had a bumpy season, up and down, in and out of the lineup a little bit. He played really, really well. He had a two-pointer. Ryland Reese had a two-pointer. They both had back-to-back. They contributed to back-to-back two-pointers for the Water Dogs. But I think the story, Adam, was this defense. You know, they've kind of started to gel and found, I think, their starters in Liam Burns, Eli Grobricht, and Ben Randall. I think those are, you know, those are the three guys we thought would start. And they kind of, you know, went through trying things out with Sabia, who still played, and BJ Grill. But I think those are their three top guys, and you know, they've combined for 5 cost turnovers in the day. But I will toss it to you to talk about Dylan Ward, because he had a huge day and we've been singing his praises all year, but tell me what you've seen from him that leads you to believe he's the Dylan Ward we miss so much.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I talked about Trevor, right, with the Atlas picking it up at the right time, and he 100% is catching fire in those sweatpants at the perfect time for Water Dogs fans, right? Joe Keegs pointed out that first 5 games of the season, he had a just under a 40% save percentage. He's almost at 68% in his last 3 games. He is an absolute beast in cage right now, doing everything in front of a dominant defense, right? The best combo is a great defense and a great goalie, right? So he's picking it up at the perfect time for this Water Dogs squad, who's gelling at the right time.
Yeah, no, and I think another area that they really dominated at was the stripe.
Yeah.
Jake Withers played really, really well against Joe Nardella, and those two are the best, you know, at the faceoff. In losing the clamp. And I forget the stat that out there, and you know, that I'm going to be kicking myself for not doing a little research beforehand, but I believe Jake Withers is over 50% after losing the clamp. So like, even if he loses the clamp, he still has a better chance of winning the faceoff after. And that's a lot in due part to, you know, his wing play with Ryan Reese and Zach Curry as well, but he's just a grinder at the stripe. And you know, a lot of credit to him in what he was able to do for this team. They're getting hot at the right time. And the team that isn't getting hot at the right time is the Whipsnakes. So obviously a huge disappointment for them. You know, they went on that 4-1 run, and then they didn't score, you know, till the fourth quarter. And at that point it was just, you know, it was too late for them to kind of make a comeback. So I asked Coach Stagnita about the status of Matt Rambo. Obviously we talked a little bit about it earlier, but let's hear what he had to say both about Matt Rambo and, you know, his team's larger issues that extend beyond, you know, missing the presence of Matt.
Look, Matt's a great player. We're hoping that we'll have him back in Albany. Matt's not a magic, he's not a magic dart or bullet. He's not going to necessarily fix what we have to fix right now. He certainly will bring some, you know, he gives us, you know, he gives us another weapon, and he's certainly a veteran and a proven player. But there's other things that we need to do better. And it doesn't matter if Matt's out there or not. If we don't do those things better, we're going to struggle.
So you heard Coach Stagnita. Obviously, they really want Matt Rambo back. They're hoping for Albany. Might not be Albany. Might be more like Salt Lake City. We'll see. We'll be monitoring that situation. But at the end of the day, he thinks there's more issues that they need to fix. You know, it's not just not having Matt Rambo. Obviously, Matt Rambo being on this offense is going to make a big difference. But, you know, they're just not looking good on defense. Kyle Burnler's just not playing well. He's just been in a funk lately. I don't know what it is, because we really haven't seen a lot of bad games from him during his career. And even when he has bad games, he tends to bounce back, you know? So I don't know. Any thoughts on, you know, his play or just this team as a whole, what they kind of need to do to get right at him?
Yeah. I mean, if any team in this league has the capabilities of kind of flipping a switch, they've already won in the past, right? They're the reigning 2-time champion. If anyone has the capabilities of turning things around in a short period of time, I think it's Coach Staggs and this roster, who's proven to be able to win in the past. You know, this may be a slump for them, but if they can have a strong week, final week in the regular season, maybe see what a guy like Gutty can do in there for them. I don't think anyone's going to want to see the Whips in the first round of the playoffs. Obviously they're in. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's something that a lot of people are going to want to see. They're down for right now, but when guys like Jay Carlson continue to produce, Brad Smith is continually underrated in this league. I as much as they're disappointing, kind of, and I as Coach Stagg said, they're disappointed in their play right now. I think they can turn it around pretty quickly with the caliber of players they have on their squad.
Yeah, no, and you get a you know, game. We mentioned how well Jake Withers played. You know, Joe Nardella 5-for-18 at the stripe. Like, that's just so not Joe Nardella. That's just not what we're accustomed to. And Kyle Bornlohr did make some big saves, you know, when he needed to in this game. He was asked to play a lot on defense. So, you know, I don't want to like completely shift all the blame onto him, because, you know, this defense needs to give him some help too. As well. I mean, I'm looking at his stats now. He made 14 saves in this game.
Yeah.
I think where I still think he's struggling though is outside shots tend to be an issue for him. He gave up 2 pointers in this one. You know, sometimes he's been giving up some easy shots that we're just not accustomed to seeing him give up, which I think is why it's kind of amplified a little bit, you know, his issues. But, you know, again, they have a little bye to kind of get right. I was shocked that they came out and kind of laid an egg in this one. But, you know, final stretch here. I think if there's any team that's as well coached as the Whipsnakes are, I think they can really turn it around. But definitely going to see more, need to see more from them in Albany.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you look at kind of just the breakdown of that game against the Dogs. I mean, they were, it's pretty close if you take out that third quarter, right? The Dogs scored 7 goals to none for the Whips. So, I mean, it's a game of margins, right? And when you lay an egg like that in a quarter, you're not going to win a game in this league with how competitive it is. So I fully expect different looking, maybe more energized squad going into this final week of the regular season. So, and this is that regular season we'll talk about in a little bit, but it's the time to try things. So a trade like getting Gutty is, with a week left, them having the ability to get him in there, see what works, see what happens. Obviously, they're still trying to get that one seed. Like you said, it's pretty unlikely, but they're still trying to win those games and get that. But they have the opportunity and the wiggle room to really kind of try things and get right going into the playoffs.
No, absolutely. And if there's a team that has, you know, a bunch of pieces on all facets of the game, you know, and adding a piece like Gutterding is just going to amplify that. So, yeah, I definitely think the Whips can turn it around. But we'll certainly be, you know, watching. And dogs, moving on to the second game, what do you say?
Dogs are absolutely barking, though, at this point in the season.
They are. Yeah, we got to give some love to the Dogs for sure, and we did. But, I think this game says more about the Water Dogs than it does the Whipsnakes. You know, I think the Water Dogs just came to play, and they have all the pieces. They are finally the team that we thought they were in the offseason. So, got to give some credit to them, too. Now, moving on, we had the Chrome taking on the Buffalo Bandits. I'm sorry, the Chaos in this one. And it was a tale of two halves in this one. The Chaos, as I mentioned, the Bandits players for them really came out and played. Chase Frazier, D3 guy, and Newman really, you know, coming into his own on this team. Obviously, he has so much chemistry with those guys. But, yeah, Dane Smith, Josh Byrne, Chris Cloutier, and Chase Frazier, all roommates, along with Ian McKay. But those four guys combined for 10 of the goals, 10 of the 14 goals for the Chaos, and all but the two-pointer from CJ Costabile, they had a hand in all of them, you know, whether assisting. So the roommates had a great weekend. I'm sure they had a great time when they finally got back home. But it's funny just to watch like all these Bandits players, you know, ball out on the Chaos. But they played really, really well in that first half. They let the Chrome kind of sneak back in though, which is again, where I have issues with this defense is, you know, you got to play four quarters. We saw that in the championship last year. They played 3 or 8 quarters and they laid an egg in that fourth quarter. And you know, one quarter can really, you know, turn things around for a team and give another team momentum. But yeah, so they cut out to a pretty commanding lead, 9-2 run. Chrome inched back a little bit, 9-4, but it ended up being 10-4 at half. And it looked like, you know, all the momentum was on the Chaos' side. But Chrome came back out and they weren't willing to die yet. You know, they wanted to keep their season alive. Obviously, they didn't get the win that they needed. But man, shout out to Kevin Rogers. You've been preaching, singing his praises for a while. Former D3 guy again from Lynchburg, you know, played at High Point for a year. He had 4 goals in this game, including a 2-pointer. 3 of his goals came in the second half to kind of lead that charge and that comeback. But any thoughts on this Chrome's effort kind of in the second half? Like, does it give you enough to believe that they can win this game against the Cannons and actually, you know, maybe make a run in the playoffs? Or do you still think it's just a little too late at this point?
Yeah, I just don't think they're gelling, right? It's just not there for me. I mean, little sneak peek. I'm picking the Cannons in the game picks. Mm-hmm. I think that's the route that it's going to end up. And going to the Chaos side of things, I mean, that is something, the letting a team come back in the second half like that is something they're really going to have to kind of keep an eye on going into the playoffs. You know, Blaze is continually playing out of his mind between the pipes. I mean, he had, again, 20 saves in this one, 66%, which is basically what every goalie's dream is, right? Saving 2/3 of your shots is elite. So, I mean, he's just been dominant all season again.
Yeah, and that's what you just come to expect from Blaze Reardon. You know, 2-time Orin Lions goaltender of the year for a reason. And I feel like every week I'm typing, you know, plus 60% save percentage for him, you know, double digits saves or whatever. And I went back and I looked at the numbers. during his 3 years in the PLL, Blaze has never had a game where he's recorded less than 10 saves. It's unreal. And a lot of these games, like, he's always still plus 50 in save percentage. So he's averaged a 59% save percentage through the 24 games in these three seasons. And 16 and a half saves average over these 24 games. 16 and a half average. That's just unheard of. Like, you know, like, you're happy if you make 10 saves for a goalie, especially in this league. And Blaze is averaging 16 and a half. So he deserves a lot of love. I love, too, like, his style. And it's really an interesting case study. I know Jake Watson, Joe Keegan are always talking about this, but he plays what they like to call this butterfly style that we kind of see in hockey. And it's interesting because, you know, I was like, okay, that's interesting. You know, he likes to save, you know, with his legs, his knees or whatever. You know, it's a unique thing about him, but, like, I'm like trying to understand, like, why is that so unique? And I kind of realized from, you know, again, reading some of their Discord, and it's not only does he save a lot with his legs, he doesn't move his stick down low. He prefers to kind of, again, do that butterfly technique where he's saving with his legs and keeping that stick high. So that way, you know, if defender or if an attackman is trying to bait him, he's not dropping his stick low. He's still keeping it high that he can make those high saves. So I thought that was really interesting just watching him. He's a fascinating case study of what a goalie can do and, you know, this unique style that he plays. And it's obviously working based on those stats. So got to give him a lot of love in this game. And, you know, the Chaos, they sneak into the playoffs that way. They have two games coming up that they'll hope to win to get themselves a solid seed, but they have to be at least happy that they're not going to be sweating a playoff spot come Albany. Now moving on to the final game, Cannons versus Atlas. We've talked at length about the Atlas. Seven different goal scorers again in this game. Everyone eats. But the Cannons gave them a little bit of some trouble, you know, throughout this game. I think that's a testament to the Cannons. The Atlas were able to get it done, but this one came down to the wire. Dan Beccaro put him up with, like, I think 7 minutes left in the game, a little bit maybe under that. And this game looked like it was, you know, headed for the over, ended up, you know, falling short by half a point on the under. But, you know, Lyle Thompson, they give him the ball with a minute left. He gets it done and gets a goal and pulls the Cans within one. And they unfortunately weren't able to get another goal to tie this game up. But, you know, I think that's just a testament to the Atlas, like, really hunkering down. You know, you would like to see them maybe step on the throat a little bit more. But, you know, again, the Cannons are that good as well on offense. They can put up points as well, especially when you have Lyle Thompson. But give me your thoughts more on the Cannons. We talked a little bit about the Atlas. Give me your thoughts more on the Cannons going into this, you know, pivotal matchup between the Chrome. And what did you see from their game against the Atlas that, you know, is leading you to pick them in this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nick Morocco between the pipes had a strong game, over 60% in percentage in saves, 19 saves on the day. You know, talking about kind of what we're looking forward to next week against the Chrome, I just think their offense is more put together, right? You know, they obviously have Lyle, right? That not much needs to be said other than that. Shane Jackson's picking it up at the right time. You know, we're talking about peaks. Shane Jackson had three goals on the day. And I just think they're a more balanced team when it comes down to it. We saw how well they played at the beginning of the season together. And I just think when it comes down to the pick, I think their team is just put together better at the moment with comparative to that Chrome squad.
No, I agree. And, you know, when you have a team that went 3-for-20 at the stripe, 15% face-off percentage from Reisman, you know, tough. I mean, he's been put in a tough spot. You know, we'll give that to him because, you know, it's not easy coming into this league, learning a new rule set or whatever. He's obviously a great face-off guy, but he's just not at the caliber of some of these other guys. And the fact that this was a one-goal game, again, against the best team in the PLL right now, in my opinion, just says that this team still has a chance. And again, I don't know how far they'll go in the postseason. They've been losing some close games. A lot of that's due to just lack of possessions. But again, you mentioned Nick Morocco. When you have Nick Morocco in cage, when you have Lyle Thompson on attack, you're always going to have a chance. You know, Brody Merrill commanding this defense. So, you know, I agree with you. I think they're in a good spot. I don't know how much confidence I have in them making a long playoff run just because there's so many other teams that have, you know, dominant guys at every position where I don't think they necessarily have that. But again, you know, they were able to get it done for the most part against Atlas. They fell just one goal short. So that leads me to believe that they at least have a chance going into this, this playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're not talking about them winning the championship, right? We're talking about two last place teams going against each other And when it comes down to it, I think at the moment they have the better roster, and I think that's why they pull this one out.
No, absolutely. I agree. So yeah, those are our thoughts on the PLL. Obviously looking forward to that matchup in Albany coming up, and then eventually the playoffs the week after. So it's certainly going to be fun. But those are our thoughts on the games this weekend. Now, Adam, let's go to our picks. We'll go back and forth on this. And in our first matchup of the weekend, we have the Whipsnakes taking on the Redwoods. Again, that rematch, that rivalry. Who do you like in this game?
Yeah, you know, the Woods beat the Whips in the last game, but I think we're going to see a reinvigorated Whip squad going into this last weekend. I'm going Whips.
I'm going Whips as well. I think they're due for a win. The Redwoods had a really solid game against the Archers despite the loss. But I think, you know, these teams, it's always a toss-up when they're playing each other, and I think the Whips are going to come out to play. So I am picking them in this matchup.
Bounce back Burnlore.
Yeah, exactly. It's bounce back for him, that defense, and bounce back for Joe Nardella, who I think, you know, him against TD is going to be a fun matchup again. It was the last time. It will be again this time, too. Moving on to the second game of Friday night, Archers Chaos. This is an interesting one. Adam, who do you like in this game?
I think the Archers are going to be at the closer to the top of the standings when it comes down to it at the end of the weekend. So I'm taking Archers for that reason.
Yeah, I agree. I think this defense for the Archers is going to give the Chaos some fits. You know, obviously Chaos are starting to find their groove on offense, but this Archers offense is just too good. And I think, you know, I don't think Blaze is going to get shelled because, again, he hasn't, you know, given up less than 54% save percentage this whole season. So he's definitely going to come to play. But at the end of the day, I think the Archers are going to come out on top. They beat them earlier in the season. So I think it's going to be a close game. I think, I don't think the Archers are going to, you know, beat them too handily, but I think the Archers are finding their groove, and the Chaos still, you know, leave a little bit to be desired on the defensive end. So I'm going Archers as well. Moving on to our Saturday matchups, Atlas Water Dogs, potential number one seed on the line. Who do you like in this one, Adam?
As much, as I don't know if I've picked against the Dogs all season, but, I was spurned last week by the Atlas. Not going to do it again. Ruby and the Bulls get the one seed headed in to playoff weekend.
I'm going Bulls as well. I agree. I think this Atlas team has just proven they can, you know, just score in a variety of ways. They just score, you know, a bunch of players. Everyone eats that, as they say. Now, I do look at this face-off matchup. Really interesting to me to see how Jake Weathers neutralized Joe Nardella so well against the Whipsnakes. I think it's going to be similar between him and Baptiste, and they both are Face Off Academy guys, so they have some history with each other. It's going to be interesting to watch. They obviously go up against each other too with Withers on the Halifax Thunderbirds and Baptiste on the Wings. So again, this is going to be another matchup to watch. We're getting two great matchups at the Stripe this weekend, and TD and Nardella, and then Withers and Baptiste. So definitely one that I have circled on my calendar, but can't bet against the Atlas. You know, I think Kyle Russo too, unsung hero, has been playing really, really well. And I hope that he can continue to do that, against a Water Dogs team that has been lethal on offense. But overall, I think the Atlas get it done. Moving on to our early playoff matchup between the Cannons and Chrome. One of these teams is going to make the playoffs. One of these teams is going to be sent home packing in their only game of the weekend. Adam, you already hinted at it. You like the Cannons. Tell me a little bit why.
Their roster is just more compatible right now. And I mean, I want to see Lyle Thompson in the playoffs.
I agree.
When it comes down to it, I want to see Lyle in the playoffs when it matters. Obviously, this is basically the playoffs already for them. So he dials it up a couple notches for this week, and he does once the playoffs start. That's why I'm taking Cannons.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely something you know, that I would be shocked if Lyle Thompson's not in the playoffs. It could very much happen. And this Chrome team, you know, have shown, you know, spurts of brilliance against the Whipsnakes and against the Archers, but I just don't think they're meshing at the right time right now. I think too many injuries. The injury bug was not kind to them at all this season. You know, missing Will Haas, missing Jesse Bernhardt, JT Dallas Harris never suited up for them. Randy Stotts never suited up for them. Jordan Wolf out after game one. It's hard to overcome that. So I feel for this Chrome team. And now, you know, they trade away Gutterding. I think Nick Grill, you know, hopefully give them a little bit, you know, more of a presence on defense. But overall, yeah, I just don't see them getting it done against the Cannons. You know, now if Connor Farrell, though, has a big day at the Stripe, they could dominate this possession game. And I think that's the key to watch, this matchup between him and Reisman. If he can, you know, get them a lot more possessions, it's definitely doable. But I'm going Cannons as well in this one, long story short. Now, our final two matchups of the weekend occur on Sunday. We have Redwoods taking on the Chaos. Chaos upset them in the last game. So, Adam, are you going Chaos or Redwoods in this one?
Keeping the Chaos brewing. Staying with that. Oh. Coach Towers going Chaos to go in the playoffs with a dub.
Now, I was kind of on the fence about this one, ironically enough. I also kind of thought, leaned a little bit towards the Chaos, just thinking, okay, they're going to be hungry for a win because I have them losing in their first matchup with the Archers. But, you know, if you had to ask me, are the Chaos going to go 0-2 or the Redwoods going to go 0-2 on this weekend? I think I'd most likely think the Chaos more than the Redwoods. So I'm going Redwoods in this one. I think the Redwoods had a solid game against the Archers. They got to limit the turnovers a little bit. They're getting plenty of possessions from TD at the stripe. So they're a team that, again, has all the pieces. They just got to put it together. So I don't think they're going to get embarrassed by this Chaos team. I don't think they're going to get shocked by them like they did the last time. I think they're going to come out and I don't know if it's, you know, going to be a sound victory, but I think they're going to come out with the victory in this one. And then our final matchup of the weekend, Archers Whip Snakes. Now, not likely the one seed game that we thought it might be earlier in the season, but definitely a lot of playoff implications. And potentially, you know, the way things shake up, we could see a rematch of these two teams, you know, in Salt Lake City as well. But definitely going to have some playoff implications on the line, even though they're both, you know, got a spot in the playoffs. Archers might be competing for this top seed, depending on how things shake out. But who are you liking this one, Adam?
Yeah, I'm going Archers. I think they're going to go 2-0 on the weekend and go into the playoffs buzzing. And a lot of people going into the playoffs may pick them as their potential champion.
Yeah, I definitely think they're a team that could make it to the championship. I think the Whips could too on the flip side. But again, you know, I need to see a little bit more from the Whips. You know, if you ask me to pick this game, I'd probably want to wait till after Friday to give you an answer, but that's not how things work here. So I'm going Archers in this one as well. I just think the way they've been playing lately, even in their three losses, you know, they're all close losses. Leads me to believe they can handle the Whip Snakes this time around and get it done. Those are our game picks from the weekend. We also were able to be joined by a member of the Water Dogs who's leading the team in cause turnovers, also a member of Panther City Lacrosse Club too, recently picked in an expansion draft, Liam Burns. So we're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then we'll toss to an interview with him and go into our Athletes Unlimited discussion.
Welcome back to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network.
Today on Pro Lacrosse Talk, we are joined by Liam Burns, Water Dogs defender in the PLL, and member of Panther City Lacrosse Club's inaugural team in the NLL. Liam, thanks for joining us. How's it going today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're going to talk a little bit Water Dogs, a little talk about Panther City Lacrosse Club as well. But I want to kind of go back to how a West Islip native like yourself ended up going to Marquette and playing for the Golden Eagles.
So for the listeners who don't know, West Islip is on Long Island. My high school career, we were number one in the country two different times, so very competitive program. And throughout my 4 years there, we sent probably close to 30, maybe 40 players to Division I programs. I mean, everybody in my senior class, all 19 players, all went on to play college lacrosse, which is pretty incredible to think about. But since it was such a good program and me kind of being like a late bloomer growing, I didn't really get any taller or bigger until my senior year of high school. I was overlooked because, as you know, back then, kids were recruited so early, like eighth grade, ninth grade. So all the big time prospects and recruits, they were already committed. So there was no room at the D1 level for me. And originally I was committed to Connecticut College. And that was all the way up until March of my senior year. And then like a month or two before that, Marquette announced they were going to Division I. Coach Ample was at Hofstra on the time, only 30 minutes away from West Islip. And he's seen me play a few times and I guess had me in the back pocket. So he started reaching out to me and he was like, hey, I'm going out to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I know you've probably never been out there, maybe even never even heard of it. Do you want to take this chance with me? And I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to play Division I. This is my last chance, my only opportunity to go Division I. So I rolled the dice and I went for it.
No, and you certainly excelled there, playing five seasons there, I believe, right?
Correct. That first year was pretty crazy. There was 20 guys who were lacrosse players that first year, but we didn't have a season. Mm-hmm. So we went there. We all knew we were going to get a redshirt year. And then that first year, to be honest, was kind of hell because the NCAA rules didn't apply to us. So we were working out every day. We were running every day, practicing all fall, and there was really no light at the end of the tunnel because we had no games to look forward to. So imagine just a fall ball and then running it back again in the spring. That's what we did the first year.
Wow.
And
yeah,
then we
imagine.
Yeah, and then Ample brought in like 20 more guys who, as soon as they came in, they got in for a real season, so they kind of got off easy, I think.
That's funny. And talk about your time there and kind of how it prepared you for making the jump to the pros. You know, kind of talk me through, you know, your transition from, you know, that redshirt freshman year to senior year.
I think one thing that made us successful was Coach Amplo's commitment to win right away. I think other coaches, maybe at other programs, like new programs particularly, would have been willing to accept kind of like, all right, we'll have a slow start. It's going to take a couple of years to build this thing. But from the get-go, Amplo was like, if you're coming here, you're going to be all in, and we're going to start winning games right away. And I mean, our second game ever, we were playing Air Force and we won. I think it was either 8-6 or 10-8. It was a 2-goal game. It was close though, but we went out to Colorado Springs and we beat Air Force, literally our second game ever, which was pretty crazy. And then every year we just kind of built like guys who've been playing together for 3-4 years at that point. Like by the time I was a senior and redshirt senior, just great chemistry. Guys knew what it took to win. And then by that time I was a 5th year senior, we had like me, DJ Grill, Jake Richard, a guy like Connor Gately at attack who played a couple games for the Rattlers, Ryan McNamara. So kind of a culmination over those 5 years, and Coach Amplo's just instilling the work ethic in us is kind of what made it all possible at the end of the day.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, you mentioned some of those guys that are current pros as well. BJ Grill's one who's actually your teammate. Talk a little bit about, you know, getting reunited with him on the Water Dogs team.
Oh, it's been awesome. I mean, so I graduated from Marquette, me and BJ, in 2016, and we hadn't played together since then. So it's been 5 years, and it was pretty crazy because, I mean, we were roommates at Marquette, and we spent pretty much every day together, either in the weight room or on the field. And then we had this 5-year hiatus. So getting back and being on the field with him, it was funny just how easy things clicked. And it was like there was no time off. It's like we were back at Marquette together. It was great. It's been great.
No, that's awesome. And currently, you know, you're leading the league in caused turnovers with 17, and this defense has really started to gel. You've only given up an average of 6.3 goals per game in your last 3 contests. How has this defense kind of been able to come together these past 3 weeks and, you know, kind of make this playoff push?
I think we just did a good job of like fitting all the pieces together, kind of figuring out who our core 5 defenders, like long pole defenders, were going to be. Mm-hmm. As like with any team early in the season, you have guys that you like and kind of shuffling guys in and out of the lineup to see what the perfect fit is. And I think it just took us a couple games, whatever it was, 4 or 5 games to figure out what worked, who the guys that have the best chemistry together are, and who's going to be kind of like your on-ball defender, which we figured out like is Ben Randall. He's going to cover the other team's number one guy every single time. You have Eli Goldbrecht, who's great. Number 2 cover guy, great at ground balls, physical. And then I'm kind of out there covering the off-ball guy floating around as the slide man. So just kind of trying different things out and then figuring out how everything fit together was the key.
No, that's awesome. And what has Coach Copeland's message kind of been too, you know, during your guys' I don't want to say turnaround, but, you know, you've put together a nice little win streak going into your final game of the season before playoffs. So what's kind of been the message in the locker room?
I mean, we duly had talent from day one. It was – just like trust the process pretty much. Mm-hmm. Taking it from the Sixers there. He's pretty hands off on the defense. I mean, he knows what to say like to the team, and collectively he's more hands on with the offense. Mm-hmm. So we have Coach Bocklet back there. And like I said, he's willing to work with us, which is helpful at this pro level. Kind of listening to what the players want to do and what the scouting report should be. Whereas like a college coach or a high school coach is kind of their way or the highway. Mm-hmm. I think at this pro level, being more collaborative with the players is what's going to make a team most successful. And Coach Copeland and Coach Bocklet are great at that.
No, that's awesome. And I don't want to, you know, put any bulletin material out there, but you are playing the top team right now in the Atlas for that number one seed. If you guys win, you have a really high chance of getting that top seed in that first round bye. So what are you guys kind of doing to prepare for the Atlas?
So, I mean, we all know that it's in the back of our minds. Like, if we win this game, we, like you said, we have a great chance of being in first place. it's a, like pro lacrosse unique where we're not together. The players aren't together all week. So for the listeners who don't know, like most of our games are Saturdays. You live whatever city you live in throughout the country and even Canada Monday through Thursday, and you have your normal job. Friday afternoon, everyone hops on a flight and we go to whatever city the game's in come Saturday. So it's kind of unique where you have to prepare with a lot of Zoom calls, like text messages and group chats, and finding a way to stay connected and communicate throughout the week. That's what makes teams successful. So for us, this week is a bye week. It's been a little bit more low key, but a typical game week will be film, a team Zoom call on a Tuesday, defensive specific Zoom call on a Wednesday, hammer home a few more points Thursday, and then everyone meets up Friday night for practice.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I'm certainly looking forward to that, you know, final game of the regular season and you guys in the playoffs as well. Going off of the PLL, but now to the NLL. So you start off with the Swarm, and then you only played a couple of games, and then you ended up really coming into your own with the Wings. Talk a little bit about playing the box game. Had you ever played the box game before, and how was it making the adjustment if you hadn't before?
Never played the box game. Couple Canadians at Marquette said that I should try out Junior A. Go up and live with one of them for the summer. Unfortunately, that never worked out, but they were like, you should really try and give it a go. And it was always interesting to me. And I knew graduating after like finishing up at Marquette, I wanted to do lacrosse full time and see how far I could go with the pro game. So I got drafted, like you said, to the Swarm, and I moved down to Atlanta right away after coming out of Marquette. I still live down here now because of that. And there's like, it's just such a different game compared to field. So there was an adjustment process to it that I think all Americans go through. And I didn't really play too much at all the first year. I ended up living in Toronto that summer and playing Senior A. And then after that, I got picked up by Philly. And Philly was great. Like, it was an expansion team, so they needed players. The league has been putting an emphasis on more Americans getting involved in that game. So Coach Paul Day, he gave me a chance. Shout out to him. And so I spent 3 years with Philly, and that was great. Every year, like, an expansion team's tough. It seems like I've been with a bunch of them between Water Dogs, Philly, and now Fort Worth. But it's kind of just same stuff as pretty much every other team. Get as the best level of chemistry possible as early on, and that's what makes a team successful. And Coach Paul Day was great at that. So shout out to him. Thanks to him for giving me a chance in Philly. But now I'm excited to see what I could do in Fort Worth with Coach Tracy Koloski.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, finding out that you were drafted by Panther City Lacrosse Club and what have kind of been the conversations with Coach Koloski.
So TK, that's what we call him. He was the Wings offensive coach. So that was my connection to him. And once I heard that he was going to be the coach of Fort Worth, I kind of thought in the back of my mind, okay, he's going to take me. Me and him like had a good connection those couple of years in Philly. And so as soon as they announced when the draft was going to be, he called me about 2 days later and he said, you're the guy we're going to take. And at first I was hesitant or skeptical to go to a new team, right? We've been building with Philadelphia for the last 3 years. Before the COVID break, we were like 10-4. We were having a great season. We brought in new guys. Like, that is a championship team. Like, they're built and ready to go for that. So I didn't want to leave that team, but it's always exciting kind of starting something new and getting hands-on from the get-go. So I know TK's, we got like a great coaching staff coming in. TK's super excited. I know there's a lot of support within Fort Worth. I don't know if there's really any other pro teams down there, but I don't know if you know, we're playing at the Dickies Arena. It's an incredible, like $500 million facility that they built for rodeos. Mostly down there, but Coach TK, he's saying that it's one of the nicest facilities he's ever seen for pro lacrosse, and he can't wait to get everyone down there to see it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to see kind of the expansion, you know, into the, you know, Texas and Midwest area. Have you talked with any of your other teammates or even, you know, GM Bob Hamley a little bit, anybody else within that organization?
Yeah, we had a Zoom call, kind of a icebreaker, get to know everybody. There's a couple guys that we have on the roster who I've played with before, guys like Connor Sellers or Liam Patton. Actually, Connor Kelly was a fellow Water Dog. He got drafted also. TK says he's, or he plans on bringing everybody down sometime in the fall to see the city kind of get acclimated and meet the rest of the management staff and people behind the scenes like that. But other than that, it's been kind of low key, slow to start. Once we get closer to the season, obviously it'll be more like get guys down there, get ready for camp, what to expect and things like that.
You know, we're certainly looking forward to seeing the 14th NLL team take the floor this coming winter. Now, moving on, I want to move on to our 5 and 5 segment. I'll ask you 5 lacrosse questions and I'll ask you 5 off the field questions. More quick hitters. Feel free to elaborate if you want, but these can kind of be quick answers. And the first one I have for you, what are some pregame routines that you have?
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh, awesome. Do you make, and are you a guy that like layers up the peanut butter or are you kind of more half and half?
Heavy peanut butter, grape jelly, 2 slices of bread. I've seen guys that'll triple stack it. That's not me, though.
That's ambitious. I'm definitely a heavy peanut butter guy myself. I feel like you got to do it on both sides of the bread. You can't just do it on one side, and that way you get that consistency.
Exactly.
Moving on, 2, what has been your favorite venue to play lacrosse at? And that can be in box or field.
Can we go back to college days?
Yeah, absolutely.
University of Denver, hands down.
Yeah, that's awesome.
People at Denver come out like, full support of that program. You got JoJo War drummer banging the drums the whole freaking game. And kind of like a fun fact, that's one of the few college stadiums that sells alcohol at the games, so the fans are always particularly rowdy there. So awesome. It was always good playing there. Yeah, I love going out there.
I didn't realize JoJo goes out to the Denver games either. I know, you know, from his Outlaws just presence that he's always at, he used to be at those games, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that guy bleeds lacrosse, so he goes to every college and pro game out there possible.
Yeah, that's awesome. 3, what is your current stick setup in terms of head shaft and stringing? And obviously, you know, you have a deep hole in the field and a shorter stick in the indoor, but, you know, how does it kind of vary?
All right, so as far as, like, what stick I use, I know I have an ECD head on an Epic shaft. That's as much as I know about the equipment. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, the stringing setup, though, much shallower pocket than most people. Ball comes out really smooth pretty early. I know some guys will see the stick and they're like, how do you cradle with this? But something that I've kind of picked up from box and living with a couple of Canadians that played like that, that's my go-to setup. But for box, it's pretty similar. I try to use a wider head in box, knock down more passes, a little easier for ground balls. And then in fields, more of a pinched type head.
Awesome. And then 4, who's your funniest teammate on the Water Dogs?
Mikey Schlosser.
He's a character. What any stories from, you know, hanging out with him?
I mean, he kind of just like lives up to that persona that you would think with his great look, like his mullet with the mustache and everything. He's a great guy overall. I mean, I'm sure in this like week off, he'll fish every day of the week and he'll golf 5 days a week. The guy, he lives to have a good time and loves lacrosse and loves winning with the Water Dogs. He's great to be around.
That's awesome. 5, if they made a PLL or NLL video game, who would you say deserves to be on the cover?
Wow.
Didn't think that was going to be your toughest one, right?
Yeah, probably Lyle.
I think he could fit on both.
Exactly. For that reason, that's why I picked him. Maybe like PLL, go with a guy like Connor Kelly, I think would be good. NLL, go with the young buck, the up-and-comer, Jeff Teat. Everyone, hopefully, I mean, you've seen like how he's taken the PLL by storm in those couple of games that he's been playing. I think we're going to see the same thing once the NLL season starts.
No, absolutely. I think he is as advertised and certainly looking forward to seeing him.
He's incredible.
Yeah. And you get to play him this week too with the Atlas.
I'm excited to see it firsthand. Yeah.
And moving on to the off the field questions. What are some hobbies or activities that you enjoy doing when you're not playing lacrosse?
I coach a lot. I do a lot of lacrosse overall. I'd say to stay in shape, I bike a lot.
Awesome.
I don't really like to run during the week. Just as I'm getting older, it's too much impact. I know I'm sounding like an old man saying that, but I've really picked up biking in the last 2 or 3 years. So that's something I like to do.
Awesome. And then number two, who's a player in another sport that you enjoy watching?
I was a big Eli Manning fan growing up. And then moving out to Milwaukee for college, huge Aaron Rodgers guy. So
gotcha.
My team is still the Green Bay Packers, so I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers.
Awesome. And he did report to camp. He is playing this season, so that's probably pretty exciting.
I was happy to see that. Did you see what he said the other day, though? He wasn't happy with the management at the Green Bay
Packers.
Yeah,
he kind of let him have it, I think. You know, I feel like that was it was nice to get it from him, too, because we keep hearing all this stuff through, like, Adam Schefter in the media. It was nice to actually get it from the mm-hmm. source, though.
Yeah, I don't know if it's warranted or not from his or from him, but I'm just glad that he signed back with the boys.
No, absolutely. It's not the same not having him play. So, yeah, I don't really have a strong opinion on, you know, if that's how he feels that way, that's how he feels, but definitely looking forward to seeing him play. Number three, what is your favorite spot to vacation?
Living in Atlanta, getting down to Florida is probably the most convenient and the most fun. My most fun vacation ever, though, I went to Europe with a couple lacrosse guys, Shane Jackson, Mark Matthews, Austin Chanks, and Jake Withers. And this was, fall of 2019, before COVID started and everything. Once our MLL season ended, we hopped on a plane. We went to London. We hit up Rome, Florence, Prague.
Wow.
And then a couple other cities. So it was like a two-week Euro trip with some great lacrosse guys.
No, that sounds fun. You live with Shane Jackson right now, too, I think Shane mentioned on the
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. And then moving on, what is your favorite meal? Do you prefer to dine out, take out, or cook at home? I know you mentioned the PB&Js, but what's your kind of overall favorite meal?
I never cook. So I always either get to go or go out to a place. Big like Mexican food fan, Chipotle, couple local Atlanta restaurants, but I'm going to say I have Mexican style food 4 or 5 nights a week.
Awesome. Number five, what's a book or podcast that you have read or listened to that you'd recommend? Or it can even be a TV show or a movie that you've been binging.
I love Part of My Take.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to that one pretty much every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
That fits with Big Cat, you know, being your
exactly
unofficial owner. So.
So do you listen to that pod?
I do. I do listen to Part of My Take. I don't probably listen to it as religiously as some people, but always enjoy him, his bashing of you guys, even though it's definitely not warranted.
After we won this weekend, he actually Venmo'd Ryland Reese $200. And
oh,
he said, go get some beers with the boys. Yeah.
I didn't know if that was real or if that was just Ryland just, you know, saying, oh, you know, thanks for the beers. Cause I thought that was just, I didn't know if that was actually real or not. That's hilarious.
Yeah, Big Cat came through. It was pretty funny. So that's the main pod, I'd say. I'd recommend for others to listen to.
That's awesome. And that kind of wraps up the 5 and 5. I always like to end on one question. What is some advice that you have for young players looking to one day play lacrosse professionally?
Play as many positions as possible early on in your career. Something that was unique for me growing up is I had two coaches who were Division I All-Americans, and they made everyone use short sticks and play all different positions all the way through 7th grade. And I think knowing how to play both sides of the ball, playing with the short stick for better stick skills, those are all just skills early on in your career that'll help you be a better player in whatever position you eventually do settle on. So kind of just playing as much as possible. Just mini games, different. So you're in different scenarios as a player, and then play different sports when you're young. Like, no sense in burning yourself out being a full-time lacrosse player at that when you're so young and at that age. Have fun with it. Play soccer, play football, play basketball. I think basketball is a great sport that translates a lot of skills translate over to lacrosse. Just getting out there and being in different scenarios and keeping it as much fun as possible so you don't get burned out is the key.
No, I like that. That's definitely some great advice for our young listeners. We certainly appreciate you hopping on, Liam. Again, take care, enjoy your flight, and look forward to seeing you guys face the Atlas coming up this coming weekend in Albany.
Great. Thanks, man. This was good.
All right. So you just heard from Liam Burns. We appreciate him hopping on the podcast, talking a little bit Panther City, talking a little Water Dogs. Now let's dive into this Athletes Unlimited discussion, Adam. great weekend for the sport. Again, the highlights continue to come. I think somehow it topped week one. You know, week one was great to have the debut. Yeah. Week two was even better. Alex Aust made her return. She had that first goal in that for Team Wood in that first game, and then ended up, you know, setting the record for 5 goals in a single game. That was the record at the time. Sam Apuza would match that. Kylie O'Miller would match that. So I think that record's probably going to be broken pretty soon way at this rate. But we also had our first overtime game. Kenzie Kent getting it done for Team Wood. Kayla Wood has not lost a game in Athletes Unlimited. I got to check and see if there's other, I'm sure there's a few other players that haven't lost a game either if they've been on Team Gold back-to-back weeks. But Kayla Wood has yet to lose a game. And she's a captain again heading into this weekend as well. But overall, thoughts on this weekend and these 6 games? Unfortunately, the one final game had to get moved to another site and we weren't able to watch it live, unfortunately. But, you know, 5 games were televised where we were able to watch. We were able to watch one of those games on Lacrosse Playground YouTube. In that 6th game, I think the social team did a great job of filling us in the details and, you know, giving us highlights even when that game wasn't televised. So overall, good job. But any thoughts, Adam, from Athletes Unlimited?
Yeah, it was just an absolute blast to watch all weekend. I mean, the ladies are absolutely showing out, whether it's Tucked Kylie Miller, as you were putting out there, or, you know, Katie Glenn coming up with a game-winning save, right, to beat Kayla Trainer's orange squad. I mean, just absolutely phenomenal weekend for the AU, you know. And, you know, you mentioned the overtime game, right? For those of you who don't know, if no one scores in overtime, there's going to be a shootout. So I hope we get at least one shootout.
We need one.
Just one. I'm only asking for one, guys. Just one. I want to see it happen. Excited to see that. But, I mean, absolute dominant performance by Kayla Wood's squad. She stays golden heading in to week 3. So it was just awesome to watch. And I can't wait to see more coming up for week 3.
Yeah, and the parity in this league is just amazing too, you know, between teams switching each week and, you know, so many close games. There was only one game that was decided by 4 goals. A lot of these games were really tightly contested. Team Warden lost by 1 goal in all 3 of her games. So that was really, you know, tough for Team Purple.
Yeah.
And Sam Apuzzo, I think, continues to play really, really well. Like, she's not getting those game win points, unfortunately, but she's still, like, at the top, just based on the fact that she keeps putting up a lot of individual points.
Yeah.
So, you know, credit to her. And that's why she was back-to-back, you know, top picks in these, you know, drafts for a reason.
And you mentioned Haley Warden's squad losing each game by a goal. Last week, we had a squad lose by 4 total goals in all 3 games. So you mentioned it. Every week is parity, primarily because the squads are looking so different every week, right? It'll be interesting to see heading down the final stretch later on in the season. You know, are drafts going to be made? Draft picks going to be made to kind of get a player that's closer to the top of the leaderboards against one another on the other squad, right? To make sure you stay atop. She's not winning those win points, right? So it'll be interesting to see kind of the calculated moves that kind of happen as the down the stretch for this AU season.
Yeah, the strategy game. I didn't even really think about that. That's a very good point. Because you look at Kayla Wood is obviously, you know, at the top of the leaderboard. So everyone's, you know, kind of vying for that spot.
Yeah.
So do you see teams, you know, maybe target players that, you know, still, you know, fit their scheme and what they want to do, but that they're kind of going head to head against. That's a great point. You know, and you have, you know, Kylie O'Miller and Dempsey Arsenault are back as captains. So all 3 of them are, you know, captains for the second time this season. So yeah, very, very interesting to see. And, you know, I think the makeup of these teams, again, is very, very interesting, too. I was really hoping Dempsey got to be captain again this week. I was really hoping she was able to reunite the BC3. Sam Apuzzo, though, of course, went first overall again. She was able to get Kenzie Kent on her team. So we're looking forward to seeing, you know, those two suiting up together again, at, you know, since their college days. It's been a while. So definitely looking forward to that. But, yeah, let's go into our game picks, Adam. Obviously, you know, these rosters, again, we're going to say it every week, they're stacked because that's just how it are. There's so many good players. We even had a few additions as well, which I think you're going to highlight a little bit later. But give me your picks for these 6 games. Who do you like as MVPs?
Game 1 pick, Kayla Wood. I don't think either of us have picked her through 2 weeks, and she's been at the top of the leaderboards through 2 weeks. It's kind of insane for us to not pick her. So I'm going her game 1. She's at the top, so she's going to be my top pick. Game 2, I'm going Alyssa Perella. I loved watching her game out of Hofstra. I think she's had a phenomenal start in 2 weeks, and I think she's going to have another phenomenal week three. Alex Oss, talk about coming out, not playing week one, and making up for it at close to the top of the standings after just 1 week of play. She's currently ranked 19th. On the leaderboard, and she's only played 1 week. So I fully expect her to keep moving up those ranks as the next few weeks go along, and she is going to have another phenomenal week. Taylor Cummings, I picked for game four. Marie McCool, you see a trend going on. Those top players are my top picks this week. But with my last pick is a player we have not seen yet, and I'm super excited to see her at the field, is Amanda Johansson. I've been looking forward to watching her play. She's been out due to injury, but she'll be back this week. She'll be playing for Team Ole Miller Purple this week, so I'm really excited to see her hit the field, and I think she's gonna make a difference for Team Ole Miller, and I think have a great weekend. So my last pick is Amanda Johansson.
And then who do you like for MVP, Adam, for the weekend?
When it comes to my MVP for the weekend, she's been atop the whole time. We haven't picked her yet, and I think she deserves it. Going Kayla Wood as my weekend MVP.
I like it. I'm not making that mistake as well. I'm definitely picking her. Not this first game, but later in the weekend. But, yeah, my picks, I'm going with Kenzie Kent to start the weekend. Again, back with MC Arsenal. I thought she's played really, really well this whole Athletes Unlimited season so far. Love watching her play. Love seeing the little hockey nuances to her style of play too. Second game of the weekend, Marie McCool. Loved watching her in that Carolina blue last weekend. I think she's playing really, really well. She overcame a lot of tough losses for her team and Team Benson in that first weekend, and is still sitting at the top, towards the top of this leaderboard. So I like her a lot. And then Kayla Wood. In the third game, like I mentioned, I have to pick her in one of these games because she's just continues to sit at the top. And then Britt Reed, she's a captain. Her and Kaylee Waters have played really, really well during this tournament. And I'm really liking how they've been playing. Obviously, it led to Britt Reed getting named a captain. So I like her to play well in this game.
Yeah, no, I love the Britt Reed pick, and you mentioned the goalie play. We have three goalies currently in the top 10 on the standings, with Britt being a captain, Kaylee Waters, and Katie Glenn in cage as well. So the goalie play has been phenomenal thus far in the AU, and it just shows the parity that we have so many different positions in the top 10.
Yeah, no, definitely, and that's why, you know, I wanted to pick her in this game. And then moving on, you know, someone that I think is flying a little under the radar, but had some highlight reel goals this weekend too, is Courtney Fortunato, you know, out of Notre Dame. I've really liked the way she's played. So I have Courtney, you know, as my pick for this fifth game. And then wrapping up, Sam Apuzzo. I gave her a little bit of love earlier. She had a 5-goal performance for Team Warden in that second game. So I think she's going to, you know, again, kind of sit at the top. I'm hoping that her team can get some, you know, some wins together, because right now she's a little struggling in the win point column. But she's playing at a high level, and that's, you know, a testament to why she's been back-to-back top picks in this Athletes Unlimited drafts each week. So I like her to wrap up the weekend, game six. My MVP pick for the weekend, mentioned her earlier, Marie McCool. First 2-pointer in Athletes Unlimited history in week one. She had a nice assist to Dempsey Arsenal for them to win that game in week two. And I think she's going to have a big weekend in week three. So I like Marie McCool to be my MVP of this weekend. So those are our picks. I'm a little bit behind in the standings right now. Adam is in the lead. I made up some ground though. I ended up winning this week, so I made up some ground, but got to make up a little bit more going forward. But that wraps up our discussion of Athletes Unlimited. Again, always fun to talk PLL, trades, news, you know, thoughts in the playoff system. That's always fun. Always fun to talk Athletes Unlimited. And again, it was a jam-packed weekend. We're only going to have six games now this weekend coming up with Athletes Unlimited. But when we return the following weekend for that final weekend in the regular season for PLL, we're getting six games from both PLL and Athletes Unlimited. So we're getting 12 total lacrosse games. So can't wait for that. But that wraps up another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk. We appreciate everyone tuning in. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. That really helps us move up in the ratings and bring you an episode as frequently as we do. But we certainly appreciate you guys listening, and we thank you for tuning in, as always, to another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk.